session number 9794, Reel 1.
Came to be a member of the RAF in the first place?
Yes, I think it really stems from, I suppose, in the very early part of 1941, very early in the new year, we were in the midst of the height of the London Blitz at that time, and I'd been working as a junior, really, and with a firm of stockbrokers in the City of London. And it was really just by chatting to a particular friend of mine in the office, we both decided that we would respond to one of the advertisements that were in the newspapers quite regularly, that we both like to be trained as pilots in the Royal Air Force.
How old were you?
I would have been just 18.
In fact, what is your date of birth?
26th of August, 22.
How did you go about joining?
I would think, when I say early in 41, probably at some time towards the end of 1940, we went to the... I think there was a recruitment centre somewhere at Euston, somewhere in the Euston area, for aircrew, and I went along there and filled in the necessary application forms, and subsequently I think I was sent for an interview and examination sometime in January or February 1941, and spent a day at the centre there at Euston, at the end of which I was told, well, really, they didn't think they would offer me a position as a pilot, but would I like to go in as an air observer? And
did that suit you?
Yes, it did indeed. My friend Francis Kelly, he was accepted as a pilot, and unfortunately, he didn't survive the battle.
Can you tell me what the job of an air observer involved?
Yes, basically, it was a combination of two duties. One was to navigate an aircraft, and two was to be responsible, if necessary, to occupy the front gun turret of certain aircraft and act as the bomb aimer in those aircraft as well. In the event, because of the design of aircraft and their progress, I never actually operationally acted as an observer. I became really a navigator because, as you probably realise, the duties of air observer were split between the two particular jobs.
And where did you do your training?
Initial training was done in Torquay, Paignton. That was an initial training wing at which we learned to march and drill properly, and also learned a little bit about the methods of the Royal Air Force and some basic instruction on navigation, forces of velocity and so forth. And from there, we sailed out to Canada, and I went to an air observer school in Ontario at a place called Mount Hope. I think it was number, if I refer to my logbook, which I've got here, it was number 33 Air Navigation School at Mount Hope, which was Hamilton, Ontario, and I was there for probably about 4 months, learning the basics of navigation and all things appertaining to it, meteorology, instruments, navigation, a little bit of about astro navigation. We did I suppose, something to the order of a 100 hours flying, 70% of which was during the day, and 30% night flying.
Why was it necessary to take you to Canada for training?
Because I think that for two reasons. Obviously, the plan was to have a fairly large aircrew force covering the fighter, bomber, coastal commands, limited airspace in the United Kingdom, which was becoming certainly a battle zone at that time. The rather difficult weather factors, I think, that one experiences in and around our coastlines, and the difficulty for under-training navigators coping with the rapidly changing weather conditions, which, and of course in Canada, it was vastly different. You're in a continental climate with very steady weather conditions which would pertain for weeks and weeks on end, so that one could learn to navigate, and indeed, if you were a pilot, learn to fly in ideal conditions. Also, I believe Canada became a centre for the whole Commonwealth air training scheme, and aircrew that were brought across from New Zealand and Australia to fight in the Royal Air Force. It was a convenient way of bringing them across the Pacific into Canada, giving them their flying training there, and then bringing them back to England.
Did you find the training straightforward, or were there any aspects which you didn't like or found difficult?
I think I, personally, I think I took to it quite easily, really. Maybe meteorology may have been slightly difficult to understand at the time. But in the main, I think I settled down reasonably well to navigation. From the navigation school, if I can just go on, I think week up, I arrived in Canada actually on my birthday, I remember that, which was August 1941. And from then until, I think the break more or less was at Christmas, that was the end of the navigation course. We then moved on to number 31 Bombing and Gunnery School, which was at a place called Picton, which was a little further east into Ontario, and I spent about 6 weeks there flying in ferry battles, learning to handle a machine gun in the air, and using a Mark 9 rather antiquated bomb sight, learning how one should drop bombs from high and low levels.
What did you think of the ferry battle? Because it had a rather bad reputation.
A nice looking aircraft, not very comfortable to fly at, because we were in an open cockpit, and in the middle of winter in Canada, changing a magazine of 303 ammunition was not easy. Not an easy aircraft to train in, but nevertheless, a nice aircraft, I would think, from the just a pure flying point of view. I would have thought it wasn't a bad aircraft, really. Operationally, obviously, it wasn't a match for the enemy's craft, but it seemed to be a nice sort of aeroplane. I quite like them. But that was the part of the training which I found a little more difficult. I wasn't particularly mechanically minded, and minded and trying to understand what made a bullet fly up the barrel of a gun wasn't quite easy to understand for me anyway at the time, and one had to learn about the theory of fire, practical firing, and I didn't find it difficult. But anyway, it was probably the most difficult part of the training for me anyway.
Had you had any inclination towards any particular type of aircraft to fly once you got started?
Are you asking me operationally?
Yes.
Well, I think I had no doubts that I wanted to go into Bomber Command. I would have been very unhappy if I'd have been posted to Coastal Command, or perhaps even more unhappy if I'd have had to stay in Canada as an instructor or something like that, become a staff man. I wanted to go into Bomber Command, basically, I think, because having lived several months in London during the Blitz, I think it was more a feeling of perhaps revenge or something of that nature to a young man, anyway.
Had you had a particularly rough time during the Blitz?
Well, yes. My parents' home had been blasted apart on two occasions. You know, we more or less lost everything anyway.
Where was that?
In the East End of London. at a place called Plaistow, where our home was when hostilities commenced. And it's certainly in September, shortly after the bombing started, we were very quickly... we didn't quite receive a direct hit, but very nearly one anyway, and the house was demolished, and I think my parents gathered what they had left together, and we found another house at East Ham, and I think 4 weeks to the day, a landmine did what the first bomb didn't do, and pretty well everything went more or less at that stage. And
so if your possessions were destroyed, you lost everything, did you?
My parents did, yes. I mean, more or less, yes.
You couldn't claim from insurance or anything like that?
Oh, I think there were... I'm not sure if the... I don't think the insurance companies paid. I mean, me, I had nothing to lose, really. I was too young to have anything of value, but I think the government compensated people for losing... At some stage, they compensated anyway. I'm not quite sure when.
But you presumably were in shelters, were you, when the bombs hit the house?
No. Indeed, on neither occasion we were. Both bombs dropped quite early in the raid, really. On both occasions, we were still in the house, probably getting ready to go down to the shelters or something of that nature. But
what was it like? Can you describe what it was like when the bombs hit?
Well, I can remember particularly with the first bomb that dropped when we were in Plaistow. I can remember the warning had gone, and there were aircraft in the vicinity, and in fact I was out in the garden, it was quite early in the raid, out in the garden just looking at the searchlights and listening to the drone of these aircraft. No bombs had dropped, and suddenly there was an awful whine and a smash, and really the house virtually at the foot of our garden, a house in which we'd lived until a year previously, had a direct hit. And I can remember when the clatter and the clamour had stopped, I looked and there was nothing there. I suddenly realised that there was a whole area of those houses had just been demolished.
How frightening was it?
Well, I don't know. I think we probably a little bit of shock, but I can't remember being panic-stricken or anything like that. I don't think any of us were.
Was there much bitterness then towards the Germans for the bombing?
I don't recollect that, no. No.
I mean, I wish we could get our hands on the pilot.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't recall that that at all. The East End of London was a fairly rugged place to live, and I think people felt that was the path of war, you know. Really, I mean, certainly people were upset, but not, I don't think vindictiveness really came into it.
But you felt that you wanted to give them a taste of their own medicine, did you?
Yes. Eventually, yes.
Now, can we pick up your career again, and can you bring it on to how you got your first squadron?
Right. Now, I think we left it at the stage that I was at the bombing and gunnery school, and the course there finished, I would think, in February, March 1942, probably. Yes, the 2nd of February 1942. Was the end of that course. I noticed that whether recommended for further specialist training, and in very large capital letters it says no. So I think I must have been a rather average pupil that passed the course, and I got my observer's wing, which was a little white brevet, which was proudly sewn onto my tunic. I became a sergeant, and in due course, via Halifax, back to Liverpool, and via a couple of reception centres, I found myself in North Wales in May 1942 at number 9 Air Observers Advanced Flying Unit, and for about a month, a total of probably 25 to 30 hours flying, split equally between day flying and night flying, we really learned how to navigate ourselves around England in wartime conditions, inasmuch as one had to use colours of the day, entering certain air spaces, which means firing off cartridges with different coloured flares. One learned about...
Sorry, I don't follow you about that.
In aircraft, there was a handgun. A fixed handgun located in an aircraft, and one had a canister of cartridges or bullets, whatever you like to call them. They were flares, actually, rather like the sort of flare one would imagine is at use in a dinghy these days. One has to take to the water, and if one is flying out of the coastal areas of England, in other words, over the sea, and then in re-entering the English airspace, there was a coded recognition signal which was fired from the aircraft. It was a means of letting people on the ground know, the air defences on the ground know that at least you could be a friend. You could be a friendly aircraft, and one learned to use things like that. There were various coded flashing beacons located at fixed points on the ground, fixed and known points. They were known to navigators, so that with night flying, because remember, one is flying over a blacked out country, and there were absolutely no no identification marks at all. There was no wireless identifying systems. At that stage, and one really was taking one's position and using these points as one would use visible landfalls as position indicators. One got to learn all about these sort of things, which were going to prove very useful when eventually one joined the squadron. So about a month was spent doing that sort of thing, and I see we were doing cross-country flights of about 3.5 hours duration, starting in North Wales, which is where we were based, at Penrhos, and we were flying over the Irish Sea to points in Lancashire, Scotland, and so forth. And at the end of that course, we moved on to an operational training unit, number 26 operational training unit, which was located at a place called Wing in Buckinghamshire, close to Leighton Buzzard. And I noticed that my flying there started let me see. On the 11th of July 1942, in an Anson aircraft. And I, as far as I remember, the operational training unit course, which lasted from the middle of July 1942 until the middle of September 1942, was really broken into two halves, because it was at the operational training unit where in maybe a haphazard fashion individuals were grouped into air crews, of which they were going to spend their time together. Is this being recorded now?
Yes.
Yes. The first half of that course, navigators were flying still as under instruction. They weren't with their own crew. They were flying with staff pilots. And mainly, they were again doing a continuation of what we were doing at the advanced flying unit in North Wales. In other words, it was perhaps more concentrated flying over areas on cross-country day and night over United Kingdom, with a little bit of practice bombing and things like that. At some time during that course, and gathered at the operational training unit, were sufficient numbers of navigators or air observers, wireless operators, rear gunners and pilots to form crews of five, because we were destined to fly the Wellington bomber, which was a five crew aircraft. And if the intention was to form 12 crews from a course, there would be 60 individuals, there'd be 12 navigators and 12 pilots and so forth. And we were more or less left to ourselves to find a crew. We weren't instructed that you, Reg Lewis, were going to fly with Mr. Bell and Mr. Reed and Mr. Beatty. And eventually I found myself with a crew of five people. One pilot and captain of the aircraft was a Sergeant Kidd from Christchurch in New Zealand. I was the navigator. By that time, we were going to have a bomb aimer in the aircraft, so Sergeant Bell, who had also been trained as an air observer, he, in fact, was going to be the bomb aimer. So, indeed, we had two people in the crew who were both trained to do two jobs. Sergeant Bell was going to be the bomb aimer. Sergeant Reed was going to be the wireless operator. They were both Geordies. And Sergeant Beattie, a Canadian, was going to be the rear gunner. We formed ourselves into this crew. Whilst I had been doing the flying under instruction around the country in Anson's at the OT, the first half of the period, Sergeant Kidd, who remember was the New Zealand pilot, he had been learning how to fly a Wellington aircraft. And once we had formed ourselves into a crew, we became the crew in a Wellington aircraft, and for the next few weeks we flew as a crew, again on day and night cross-country exercises, a rather longer duration. And we also did high-level and low-level bombing and such forth. And we probably did somewhere around about 50 hours flying of that nature. It waited. And this was perhaps becoming the practice, because in May of that year, and remember, we are now in September, early September, in May 1942, had been the first 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne, and in order to achieve the magical 1,000, Bomber Command had called on aircraft from as many resources as they could find, and that involved using some crews from operational training units. And this was continued again in September because, to our surprise, and certainly as rather a shock, we found ourselves being briefed for an air raid on the Ruhr, namely to Düsseldorf, on the 9th of September 1942. And we were going to carry four 500-pound bombs. In fact, what happened to us was, I've got a note in my logbook, we had some trouble with the aircraft and we returned with our bombs and we were in the air for 2 hours and 45 minutes. I think from memory, there was trouble with one of the engines, the magneto, something wasn't functioning properly and we returned. But a week later, we in fact were briefed again to carry out a raid on Essen, again in the Ruhr, again with 400 or 500 pound bombs, and that operation was carried out in as much as we got into the heart of the target area, and I had some difficulty, I must confess, with navigation on the way back. It was the first really long trip that we had undertaken, and I have a note again in my logbook that we landed at an airfield called Castle Camps, which was, if I remember, was on the Essex-Suffolk borders, and I well remember the reason, because we were flying back on dead reckoning navigation, and when I estimated that we were somewhere in the area of Abbeville, I probably steered northwest to hit the English coast, but we must have been a little bit east of that, because I'm certain that we flew up the east coast, off the east coast of England for some way, and we had to seek the help of wireless stations to get us onto some sort of course, and it was with not very much octane left in our tanks that we landed at Castle Camps. I think I got a rocket from the commanding officer of the operational training unit as a result thereof.
Can you describe what these enormous bomber raids were like? It must have been a very impressive sight.
Well, of course, to an extent, Navigator doesn't see anything like as much as other people in the aircraft. The main reason, one is working most of the time, one is listening to reports from the crew, hopefully the